Hello, welcome to another episode of the 99th Rugby Podcast. Apologies that it is a couple of days late, but you know, in this crazy modern world, sometimes things just get delayed. So, you know, how about trying to just exercise a little bit of patience and not worry too much about it, huh? You thought about that? Yeah, you better. Anyway, enjoy some royalty-free jazz. Welcome to another edition of the 99's Rugby Podcast. Myself and young David here, again, regaling you with the rugby news. The more niche stuff of the week, Dav, isn't it really? Rather than focus on scores on the doors, it's a little bit more getting into the intricacies of what happened. A bit of an interesting one this week, mate. We've got some good stuff to cover. But first off, before we get into that, how are you doing? What's been going on? What's new?
I'm back at home. It's lonely here now. Not in your warm company. So anybody who enjoyed the improved audio quality last week, because we were in the same room and we could record it better, it's not a Zoom call, you're shit out of luck, I'm afraid, because it's back to good old-fashioned bad internet gremlins causing all kinds of problems.
You enjoy that grainy quality and you'll like it.
Yeah. Then you ever get too, think you're too good for it. I had an interesting week. Obviously, rushed back yesterday, on Monday, got back for football to then get pummeled, as always. The last game of the season tomorrow, so we'll see how that one goes.
What's the feel around the camp? Is it, you know, one of those where it's happy the season's over, a bit of relief, you know, after a tricky season, or is there optimism of a mid-table finish, perhaps, or even around the Champions League spots?
Well, I think we had dropped down the table since we took over the team that was actually there before. So I think Champions League is probably not on offer. But, you know, I think we could probably recover a mid-table out of it. We feel like there's got to be a crap team that we're going to play at some point, because so far, everyone's been decent footballers.
I'm surprised.
One poo team that we beat. There's got to be at least one more. If not, you know, I'm sure we'll go down bravely again tomorrow night. Another 7-3 defeat, something like that. Other than that, I made a second cricket debut of the season yesterday. Played for Nuneaton, our good friends at Nuneaton Cricket Club. Turned out for the fourth team, got a duck, and we got pummeled.
So it turned into a bit of a sports mercenary, Dav. You've been around playing five-a-side, various cricket teams. A bit of a nomad.
A bit of a cricket whore. Played for two different teams now. But I had all that time where we weren't allowed to go and do any sport. So now it's back on offer. Any offers, I won't say no. You know, if you're out there and you need someone to, I don't know, make up a doubles game of badminton, I'll be there. you need someone to hold the ropes at a rock climbing wall. I won't know what I'm doing, but I'll give it a go. You've got to put your life in my hands. What other sporting things can you do? If you need a caddy, I'm happy to caddy. If you need a horse for a bit of dressage, I'll give it a bash. You name it.
Getting dangerously close to some sort of fetish play now, Dav. We're going to get some weird people calling us up. Do not make a business card.
I draw the line at fetish play. If that's what you're after, I will politely decline. It's not my bag, not my cup of tea.
If you're looking for a third and a threesome, Dave's your man.
Even that is a lot of pressure.
Unbelievable.
That's not for me. The best I can offer is to make up a foursome, but for golf.
Strictly sports, people. Strictly sports.
Yeah. If you make some sort of contest out of it, then you know maybe I can get involved in your whatever your weird romantic ideals are. But
brilliant. Well, talking about sporting prowess and your sporting prowess, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole this week and watched, the Rugby Nats YouTube series. I think I mentioned this to you the day that I was watching a few of them, and I watched a couple of them, and I saw your mug on the Rugby Lions episode, Rugby Nats, for the people out there. If you haven't watched it before, it's actually quite interesting. It was like a crew of guys, and they went around to a lot of sort of like National League clubs up and down, you know, England, and sort of spent a week with them. Jumped in on their training, videoed things, then were there on a match day and stuff like that, spoke to the unsung people in and around the back scenes of the club and stuff like that. Really interesting concept. I don't think they've done anything for like 2 or 3 years plus now, which is a real shame. I'd love to see something like that get back out there in, because it gave a lot of exposure to you know, a lot of these clubs with a good bit of history. Obviously, you know, Rugby Lions, one of the oldest in the country. I know they went to places like Burton as well, so another Midlands club. They were down at places like Bournemouth and stuff like that as well. It was really interesting. So I went down a bit of a rabbit hole and watched a few of those episodes again, which was quite cool. And then really, it's just been at the grind, to be honest. Pre-season is well underway now. Onto the game plan stuff now, mate. The conditioning side of it's taken a slight sideward step. It's more about getting the game plan right and working with the team to get those little details ironed out. And then breaking ground. Had some of the under-14s down for a bit of slave labour this week. Didn't make it... Digging out for the foundations for our gym space that we're looking to develop at the club.
Yeah, I saw that on Instagram. I did enjoy the slave labour thing. There's not enough these days.
There were promises of a lager shandy at some point. So.
In our modern world, there's limited slave labour going on. So it's going to be the traditionalism there down in the southwest. My one regret for that Rugby Nats video is I couldn't think of a funny thing to say for the crossbar challenge. didn't do it. I wanted to think of something daft. I wanted to say we had a winger who was a bit chunky. I used to joke he was a prop, so I'm going to say his name and say prop. But then he went before me and then actually said prop. So well, that joke's gone. I couldn't think of anything else.
Bottled it, Dave. Yeah. That was a big moment because, you know, I would have fancied you to get close to the crossbar on that, mate. Was it drop kicking or?
Drop kicking. I think it was that's quite 22. Difficult. Can't remember
now. Difficult.
One guy nailed it. It was literally the last attempt. We'd had a few chances and the guy did it. He nailed it.
It's great though. I mean, that series is really good. It shows you how good some of the facilities are. Because, I mean, Lions have got a fantastic facility there. Like the sort of state, they've got probably better facilities like ground-wise than championship clubs.
Oh, definitely. It's
100% better than set up than, no disrespect, but, you know, better set up than... I know Ampthill don't have a stand, I don't think. Nottingham Rugby, I know, don't have a permanent stand. So Webb Ellis Road is actually, facilities-wise, you know, National One championship level. Really is.
It is, yeah. The changing rooms are nice as well. Like, they're not super modern and fancy, but they're spacious. At least the main changing room is. And the main home and away dressing rooms are nice. Seconds aren't fantastic, but well, the showers work. You know, normally you get pressure or you get heat, but never both. They have both down at Webb Ellis Road. It's lovely. The only real thing that lets it down is the path up the drive, like private drive up to the club, is potholes galore. It's a real suspension killer. But other than that, lovely ground. Lovely people there, actually.
Yeah, I remember dropping by once after. I think I played a game at Newbold and Avon, didn't I? Mm. It was like last game of the season. It was good weather. It was like May sort of time, isn't it? So I popped around. You guys were having a braai. Proper braai.
Oh, yeah, we were with that, yeah. There was some fucking massive sausages on there.
Yeah.
That thick and like that long. We made jokes about one player's private region.
That's a classic rugby bit of banter right there.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first time you met a friend of the pod and 99's player Patrick Burke as well. He came and had a bit of sausage as well.
Well,
at Webb Ellis Road. So if you're out there and you're looking at, you know, maybe going around and seeing some rugby grounds, if you're just by rugby or the sort of East Midlands, West Midlands area, drop by Webb Ellis Road. It's not a bad place.
Nice ground, a lot of nice people. And I've heard really nice pies. I've never had one, so I was always playing. But, several people have told me, oh, yeah, pies are really nice, and they've never been able to have one. But, yeah, all the staff down there, very, very friendly folk. Good laugh. The fans, they make a bit of noise, bang on the back of the stand. It's good fun. There's a stadium announcer. It's great. Twice I scored, they got my name ran out. It was fantastic.
Did they go full name? Because you've got a fantastic name.
Really. They did not drop the middle names, which for the sake of identity protection, I will not reveal online, just in case someone chooses to steal my identity from this podcast.
Fantastic. It could be some of our listeners out there. We're not sure. We're starting to worry now that our French and German listener could be bots. I don't know. They're not people. They're anonymous. And it's scaring me a little bit. I'm worried at some point in the night, someone's going to be stood over my bed. And he's just going to be saying, Auf Wiedersehen. Or possibly, Ola.
That would be a terrifying thing to say. Auf Wiedersehen. Yeah. Ola would be odd, because that's not the language of either of those countries.
No, that's the thing that's scary about it.
But Auf Wiedersehen, just saying, imagine waking up with someone saying, goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm worried about happening, Dave. I'm very scared at the moment.
Yeah, well.
But anyway, enough of my fears. Let's talk about some real rugby
stuff. Thinly veiled racism.
Let's talk about some rugby stuff. Obviously, cracking week of Prem action. The score lines in some of the games have been fantastic. Northampton Saints getting themselves 18-0 up against Chiefs today to bottle it and lose 29-26. But there's quite a few games that have been really close. And one in particular that I guess we will focus on because of it's brought up an interesting conversation topic, actually, would be our team, our boy club. The Leicester Tigers went down 26-23 to Bristol Bears in very controversial fashion. Now, I know you hate rugby, so you didn't watch any of it.
Yeah, cannot stand it.
So, and for everyone out there, it's really interesting. It's created a big topic of debate. And I'll tell you what happened, and you can tell me if you think it's, you know, shithousery, gamesmanship, whatever. So, John Afoa, I believe, has come back from injury, right? And he got subbed off at half-time or just after half-time, so 40-ish minutes on the clock. So he's gone off, so he's on the bench. Tigers are, as usual, good, strong scrum, absolutely pummeling Bears throughout the game, picking up a lot of penalties. Game moves into overtime, 26-23. After a series of scrums on the five-metre line, yellow card comes for the Bristol tight end, who had come on as a sub for John Afoa. So with that scenario, obviously, as you know, if you can bring on a front rower, you have to bring on a front rower to have competitive scrums. If you can't bring on a front rower, then it goes to uncontested scrums. And now you lose an extra player. So another player has to leave the field and you have to have a full eight scrum. So Bristol, in that scenario, would have gone down to 13 men. Because as it was suggested, Afoa had initially, everyone thought he'd gone off injured. Ian Tempest, the referee, goes over to the fourth official. The card that they have to hand in for the reason for the substitution says it's a tactical substitution, which, as we know, means a front row change can be reversed because, obviously, front row being a specialist position, we need to kind of have that ability to bring them back and forth. Otherwise, we'd possibly see uncontested scrums quite a lot. So it's listed as a tactical change. Now, Pat Lamb, Steve Borthwick come down because there's a lengthy stoppage at this point while they're discussing things with the team manager. Pat Lamb says he's injured and points at Ian Tempest and says, if he comes back on and gets injured, it's your fault. His exact words, direct quote. Now, they say it's a tactical change and he explains to Pat Lamb that if you don't bring someone on, it's going to go down to you're going to go down to 13 men, which all of a sudden now it changes and John Afoa runs on. Pat Lamb smack him on the arse, get on. And Steve Borthwick lost his shit and said, you've just said he's injured, because they were literally going to change the reason on the card. So Ian Tempest said, right, well, then we need to change the reason on the card that it's an injury substitution. Therefore, the one can go on. And literally before he could finish, they were like, no, get on. And they sent him on. Ends up going on. There's a lot of very childish back and forth in between Pat Lamb, the referee, and Borthwick on the sideline. Anyway, he ends up on the pitch. The scrum, now, this is a judgment call. The ball appeared to still be in between the number eight's feet and the second rows. The angle, it might have skewed out outside. But Andy Ewan picks the ball up, boots it out, and everyone's like, is that it? The referee sort of looks like he's going to blow full time. The touch judge, the Hamish, the guy who's got the bald spot on top of his head, awful lid, by the way, they're sort of like deciding whether this is the end of the game. And he's sort of like saying, no, it's fair. Then out of nowhere, John Afoa starts giving it the big jumpy and absolutely chest bounces Richard Wigglesworth for no reason. Wigglesworth grabs him by the back of the collar and fucking judo flips him and gets on top of him, starts throwing like the elbow, he rubbing the face. It all kicks off. And then I think Nathan Hughes tries to hook Genge out from behind. This is a sub as well, by the way. He's wearing his sub bib. So Genge turns around and starts laying in. I think he makes contact with his eye area, not in terms of like actually going for him, but just because they're going for each other. So who knows? There's a few things there which might end up getting some investigation. I believe the RFU says they are investigating into the incident. But the key cliff notes are the sub was listed as tactical. So whatever Pat Lam himself says, if it's not been changed, it's listed as tactical. In my opinion, you can go on. And two, the ball probably was in still, so Leicester should have got a penalty anyway. But in the grand scheme of things, this result has not changed the league for Leicester, but it has done for Bristol. They've probably secured top with that. And finally, good little punch-up, which has now, in the papers today, said been declared as marring the game, which is absolute tosh. Anyone who wrote that in a newspaper, soft.
Wow.
What's your thoughts on all that?
Yes. We'll start where the fans want to start, and that's a good old Barney. A bit of a everyone loves a scrap. I don't care what anyone says, marring the game. Rugby's an aggressive game. Occasionally it spills over. People like to see it.
Rugby's the only place other than like boxing where you can, well, like sport is the only place really in general that you can take physical violence and aggression and use it to solve your problems. And not go to jail.
And my thing with that when it happens in rugby, it's very rare that anyone actually gets hurt. Mm. And it gets the crowd going, gets the players going. It's more or less part of the game. I don't think we should necessarily have it like ice hockey where two players have an agreement and they just stand and bang and kind of have a, you know, you want to go, bro? And they go, yeah, go on. Then they drop the gloves and start swinging. But like up and down the country on a Saturday at amateur level, there's not a million cameras watching. Somebody gets punched in the face at the bottom of about 75% of every rug.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And most of the time, it's funny. Everyone laughs it off. Sometimes there's a reaction. You jump in. There's a bit of collar grabbing.
There's always some good ones when you see like two guys who've got, you can tell they've never thrown a punch in their lives and they're just absolutely swimming for each other and just completely missing every single punch. And it looks like, it's about a punch in Judy or something like that.
And I just think that because of the nature of the game, you're going to get those things happen all the time. And I don't necessarily should be encouraged. I think you should just get all the bands are going to get, but I don't think we should be pretending as a rugby like fan culture that, oh, it's terrible stuff. No one wants to see that because, you know, everyone does want to see it. You tell me the crumbly terrace.
We think so much of ourselves, don't we? We think like in 2021, we think we're so like high and mighty as society and people are so much better than history. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But let's not remember we are the species that used to gather in a crowd of like, I don't know how big the Colosseum was, 30,000, I think is the estimates, possibly bigger than that. But they used pretty to stand large, in an arena of that size and cheer and clap for people getting their limbs cut off and like lions eating Christians and stuff like that. So we're not, you know, we're only 2,000 years removed from that. In a grand scheme of like the length of time, that's not even like a grain of sand in if like the existence of Earth was a desert. It wouldn't even be like a speck of sand. So, like,
well, even more recent than that, like only like 100 and so years ago, like public executions, they were big crowd favorites.
People still got hung. People still got hung until like 1960 something. So
that was the best entertainment you got in a town was when, you know, someone got hung. You know, the whole town came out to see it. You know, throwing some tomatoes.
Or someone in the stocks getting a few cabbages thrown at them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's,
we're all for fighting, but yeah, I don't want to see like Duncan McRae and Ronan O'Gara kind of thing.
I don't want to. if it's Ronan O'Gara on the floor again, then
oh damn. Maybe we we can agree to disagree on that. But I want to see if someone puts a high shot in and someone runs in and punches him, I think fair enough.
You want to see a bit of the old fashioned days. Actually, there's a really good clip on YouTube, which I will try and find, and I will link in the description of this episode of
Renanagar again, filled in by Duncan McRae.
I'll put that in there as well because that's just funny. But it's a Heineken Cup game from about 20 odd years ago, and Leicester are playing Munster at Welford Road. And it's the good old days of that. Like, I think it might have been the year those two teams even met in the final or just before. It was the the Tigers team was, you know, the likes of Rowntree, Garforth, Martin Johnson, Martin Corrie, Moody, you know, them kind of players. The real old school good Leicester team. And it was when Munster were pretty good as well. They had would have had a young O'Gara, a young Peter Stringer in that side. And there's a bit of a rolling maul. And there's a couple of Munster players come in at the side. This might have been before the gate was actually a rule, so you just do what the fuck you liked. And Martin Johnson, clear as day, throws at least three punches. one's like an overhand. Someone else hits him back, but then he grabs someone and like swings an uppercut at him. The maul gets pulled down, whatever. The linesman gets his flag out, and the ref comes over, oh, what's going on? In this really strong like Welsh accent, the linesman goes, all right, I've seen four green uppercut, just give him a talking to. that's what you want from rugby. Like, if it's outrageous, like it's, you know, there's no place for it, but I just think like you kind of want it a bit. It's an aggressive game, and it's
we're trying to be like, oh, it's, you know, oh, it's quite a middle class sort of sport. It's this, that, this gentleman and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it is a violent sport. It's the idea is you physically impose your will on the other team.
Yeah.
You know, the maul is not always like, you know, having a really good driving maul or a good scrum is not always down to technique. Sometimes it's down to raw aggression and power and bullying the opposition into submitting. It's like even like going to a wrestling match and going, oh, I don't want to see them body slam them too hard. That's how you win.
Yeah, it's this, and rugby's a, people can, I think, can make up that, you know, rugby are such and such more skillful team or whatever. You're a really good, you know, like you say, the set piece is really well tenor, they're good tactically, it's a good kicking team. But at the end of the day, a team that can bully another team, 9 times out of 10 are going to win if they get on top that way. Mm-hmm. And like, the fact is, at the amateur level, rugby is very much similar to what it was, where, like I say, you get cheeky digs here and there. It's not unusual for it to spill over a little bit, and the referee just takes time to calm it all down.
Yeah.
You know, there's a funny story, actually, of Martin Bayfield telling a story about Wade Dooley getting knocked out. Yeah. He looks up at the ref and says, do not send that fucker off.
Yeah. There's a fear in that poor Frenchman. Was he French or was it Argentine? Was one of them, wasn't it?
I think it's France, yeah. That was another one. When Martin Bayfield did get knocked out by Freddie Mendes, and he did get red carded for it. Because it was a cheap blind shot, that's why.
Yeah, that's the thing. The one that I always loved was, you know, Andrew Sheridan when he got knocked out by Julian White. But the thing was, is, you know, good scrimmage, it's sort of stood up, it's got a bit like pulley. Andrew Sheridan throws the first punch and misses. Like, he cocks and throws a little punch and misses. And it must have been one of those moments where it's like, you know, like the Dukes of Hazzard when it freezes. Oh, damn, them boys got themselves in trouble again. That's literally what he must have been running through his head. Because he just absolutely thunders him with a left hand that knocks him clean on his arse. And this is like, you know, Andrew Sheridan was like 18 stone bloke. Like a hard as fuck loose.
He goes down like a sack of shit. That was hilarious.
Julian White now, and a red now card. Farmer. Yeah, Julian
well,
White
now a farmer. Clip, I think it was... What another the 99 World Cup or the 2003 World Cup? And Fiji played France. And one of the Fijians grabs a French player's arms from behind. And another player just twats him around the face. I think they only got a yellow for it.
Well, I just love
that. That's the extreme end where you go, that's probably a bit much. That's but if someone stands up and swings at a scrum, I think it's knocked out. Well, don't swing after a scrum.
Both go on yellow.
On yourself, yeah.
Both go on yellow. Because I think nowadays it's like, oh, if you hit them, you get gone. Whereas, like, I don't, you know, don't punish the bloke just because he's better at boxing or better at fighting.
Like, I think if you hit someone unprovoked, red card, that's fair. But if someone swings and you swing back, I think just yellow for both of you, calm down.
Mm. That's what it used to be. We were at age group, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I remember that.
You've had umpteen yellow cards for unprovoked attacks.
No, I would say unprovoked.
My favourite one was when you got yellow card for getting beaten up. That was hilarious. Came off the bench, got beat up, and then got yellow card.
Which one was that?
There was a school one game. And you got subbed off. You didn't get yellow card. The coach subbed you off for fighting. You didn't do anything. You just got battered.
Yeah, I got bad. I got battered in my varsity match in second year as well. 10 seconds into the game, right? We catch the kickoff and, you know, play like one wide pass away and we sort of hit it up. Our inside centre hits, so I'm playing 13. I sort of come over and like their ceiling and, you know, we sort of got this guy out and the referee said, yeah, no more hands. And then just blatantly, like their seven just puts his hands back in and is like going for the ball. And I'm just sort of like half looking at the ref thinking, okay, we said no hands and it's obviously slowing down the quality of the ball. So I go, right, better ruck justice. Put one hand underneath him, sort of like between his legs, lift him up onto my shoulder. Carried him back like 2 meters, just body slammed him onto the floor. I thought that's a marker laid down. That'll do. Then out of nowhere, I just get thundered into the side of the head, bang, like 3 times. Their tight heads like grabbed me by the back of my collar, so my arms are flailing all over the place. And just proceeds to like punch me from like back mount in the face, and no one helped me. Just gave me like 5 digs and then stopped. And the ref called us both over. He goes, what the fuck are you two playing at? It's the first minute of the game. Binned us both. like my face was like swollen, like I've been stung by 10 bees. I was like, for fuck's sake.
You need a bit of like street justice, I think, in rugby, because the referee doesn't see all of it.
No. But the problem with the professional game, though, is I think in a way is they do see everything now. It's such a shame. And it's you know, you get such lengthy stoppages looking at like 7 different angles to get a decision right. And it's great that we can get decisions right. But the one thing I always liked about football before VAR was a bit of controversy. That's what sport is, a bit of controversy as well. It needs controversy, like much like the fighting, much like a bad decision or something like that. It kind of needs those moments. Like, again, Tigers versus Munster, the Heineken Cup final. The hand of back, that's like such a famous moment. The hand of God with Maradona, you know, sport really can change the world and can have these big moments that everlasting in history forever. And, you know, it's a bit of a shame at times, but, you know, there's a lot of temperament. I hear a lot of fans kicking off now that they think there's too much TMO. The TMO himself is a referee now, if you know what I mean. He makes a lot more of a decision rather than just advising.
Yeah, I think it worked well when it was first introduced, really, TMO. I think you give it too much power. It's where it comes into it, like, was there foul play? And you look at a trillion angles.
Yeah. Well, they shout up as well. They shout up and go, oh, you need to look at this. And it's like, yes, but I'd rather see the player get banned post.
Yeah, cited for it anyway. The commission, that citing commission that used to get it done. Like, if you can punch someone in the back of the head sneakily enough that nobody sees it, you should get away with it, really.
Yeah, at least until like after the game and get banned like the week after. But yeah, I kind of would, if I had a little bit of power, I'd redact the amount of power that they have a little bit, you know. And I think the TMO should go, you know, in that sense, if they see something post, you know, post sort of stoppage or whatever, that they should just put it straight to the sighting commissioner. Do you know what I mean? They should maybe have a link to the sighting commissioner rather than being able to influence the game too much. Because, like, I think if something goes past like 2 or 3 phases, then it's kind of too far behind now. I don't like this whole thing that, like, I've seen like play go on for like 2 minutes recently, and then a red card's been given for something that happened like literally 2 minutes before that. I think that kind of thing's a bit of a killjoy.
For a red card, I always think it has to be something so blatantly obvious the referee's going to have seen it. And if it's not, it's like it's something well off the ball where someone's like kicked someone in the face or knocked someone out completely.
Yeah.
You know, interesting. Like, unprovoked. But
interesting question here. But I do want to get your opinion on the sort of shithousery element of this whole story, this whole song and dance. But just a quick question. I think it's interesting because it's just sort of popped back into my head. And it's something that I hear a lot of people talk about. How long should penalty advantage last for in the 22? Because you see it so often now, like teams going through like 20 phases, picking and going. And then they end up coming back for a penalty advantage, like an offside, literally sometimes 2 minutes prior to that, just because of the sort of passage of time. Do you think there should be a set number of phases, time limit?
I think it should be a time thing, or like, have you gained an advantage basically with them not having the penalty?
Because it's hard, isn't it? Because if it's a penalty in the five, the only real advantage could be scoring, really. Tangible advantage. But
you can get... It's whether or not you do anything with it. Like, if you've got no intention of doing anything, you're just picking and going for, like, 5 minutes, then refs should just say, like, oh, fuck it, and give a penalty. Like, for me, if I was a team and you've got advantage in year 22, that's a free one. A couple of phases and then try some sort of attack. Because if you fuck up, you fuck up. You get the penalty anyway. But I think when a team gets it, picks and goes. I think the referee should just put a stop to it. I don't think you should lose the advantage. I think if you get a penalty in the 22, you should have a crack. If you don't score or get close to scoring.
Yeah, maybe like a five-phase limit or something like that. Before they either call it back or advantage is over.
Yeah. So I think advantage over, if you've not got anything, is probably harsh. But say you're in just on the edge of the 22 and you go, okay, got a 3-1, let's have a go. And then you get within, a gnat's bollock of scoring, and you get, it's just a tackle, a metre out. The team rooks. Well, you've gained an advantage. You're on their line. If you then fuck up from there, then advantage over. But, when they just trundle, I think refs should just go out. You're not getting anywhere. Just give the penalty. Get the game going. They kick the points and go for the corner. Actually get a better chance from it. I guess we should move on to the rest of the
main feature
issue.
The main feature of this debacle.
In terms of from what the sound of things is that it was Bristol brought him off at halftime, brought a fella off at halftime because they wanted to not play him the whole game. Actually, he wasn't injured. Obviously, he's coming back from injury, and then Pat Lamb didn't want him to go back on. It's probably one of those like little niche things where this has probably not really happened very often. And they probably didn't really even know the rules, to be honest. And they weren't.
I don't think they do. I don't think, because it's quite a new rule to lose another player if you can't field a competitive scrum. So, yeah. So it's. I agree. I think. You know,
I don't think there is. I don't think a little bit of shithousery really goes amiss. I think it's part of the game. Like, anyone who goes, oh, well, it's just not on, really. Shoes on the other foot. You do the exact same thing. And again, I don't think they know the rules. It's such a rare occurrence.
I think he thought that he could, because he knew that they were under the pump at the scrum, that he could say, oh, no, yeah, Big John's 2 inches to go back on. And then we'll just be able to put, like, I don't know, a back row replacement at tight end and just still be down to 14.
Mm.
I think he thought that's what they could do, which, again, would be okay if Jonathan was actually, struggling and injured. But the reason why it can't be shithouse is, like I say, because they put down a tactical sub on the form. So he could go back on. So in that sense, it's fine. I think the element of shithousery is the fact that, like you say, they're unsure of the ruling. And when he heard, no, you'll be down to 13 if he doesn't go back on, he went, oh, shit, better go on then.
Yeah. I think, but I get why you don't probably, he's come back from injury. Probably the plan was only to play him for 40.
Mm.
And then, like he says, if he comes back on and gets injured, it's your fault, that's probably a cock end thing to say, but I appreciate the heat of the moment. Get a bit irate, under a bit of pressure.
And like you said, I think it's something that everyone would have done, and everyone would kind of want their team to make the best decision to try and win the game. Is it contrary to like rugby's good values? A little bit, because you can tell when he was saying, oh, no, yeah, he's injured, because he was definitely trying to go for uncontested scrums. But if you can shit house the rules, you can shit house the rules. It's a game at the end of the day. It's like, you can get away with something in Monopoly or whatever you do, don't you? If you can get away with collecting a bit of extra money, passing go or something, you do. You bend the rules to fit yourself. It's a game at the end of the day.
Rugby, generally speaking, is a game where cheaters do prosper.
100%.
If you're good at cheating, you generally will be a good player, like you end up winning games, etc. So,
well, the greatest player in the world is arguably considered like the worst cheat at the breakdown.
Yeah, Sir Richard McCaw.
Yeah, so
I think, rugby's values, they aren't really about, in terms of sportsmanship, it's about being able to shake your opponent's hand after the game. But those 80 minutes, do what the fuck you like.
There was not any handshakes going on at the end of this game. It was very, very ill-tempered.
I'm sure once they got off the pitch and had a shower, you know, they probably had a cuddle in the clubhouse, if they're on that, whatever the COVID rules are.
Well, it was great to see them again.
One thing,
back in the ground.
Of course, yeah. 6,500, I believe, was the attendance, which was the maximum allowed. I do have one question. Did the referee blow for full time before John Offoa got all jumpy and started a scrap?
So he hadn't.
Because if the ref hadn't blew up for full time, for me, it should be a penalty to Leicester for being a cock.
Yeah. Well, but then I heard Ben Kay earlier on the telly when they were recounting it, saying, oh, well, it would actually be a penalty against Leicester for the retaliation. I hate that retaliation crap. If someone jumps into me and barges me, they're getting fucking thrown to the floor. And yeah. I don't think that should be a penalty against me for not doing it.
I think reversal should be for shit out in the ref. I think if someone went, or if someone is hands in the ruck and you just twat someone for no reason, then yes. Yeah. But if someone's been a cock like that and jumped in your face, then if he gets beat up, it's his own fault. What's if you're a tight head prop getting beat up by a scrum half?
You've got to watch it, mate. It's textbook flip, textbook fucking collar, the little flip over like that.
I mean, I know that scrum half.
If he wasn't injured before, he's definitely injured now. Put it that way. He's 40 years old. He's 40 years old. Wee's 40 years old as well, but I'll tell you what, John, if I was back, he's going to be feeling 65 today because he got absolutely slammed dunk.
Well, if he's got a calf injury, lift a leg, punch him in the car.
Well, this is what I was saying. We watched that film when you were here the other day. If you've never watched Semi-Pro before, there's a fantastic bit in it. It's arguably Will Ferrell's finest work. That and Talladega Nights may well be the best of Will Ferrell. If you're a Will Ferrell fan, I hope you agree. The other stuff's good, but for me, those are the prime Will Ferrells. But anyway, Semi-Pro, there's a moment where they have a fight, don't they? And it's fantastic. It's basketball. It's like a full 10-on-10 basketball fight. The bench is empty. It's fantastic stuff. And he puts someone's leg into a full stretch and punches him in the back of the hamstring. I think he hits someone with a shoe as well.
Yeah, the best by the commentator's table, and the commentator picks up the phone and hits someone in the back of the head.
Will Arnett, voice of BoJack Horseman, as
which
well
I
as
didn't,
being in
did
Arrested
not realize
Development
until you pointed it out to me. So you know, you learn something every day about the film Semi-Pro.
Yeah. But no, that was just part of a bumper weekend of Prem stuff. To be fair, I haven't watched all the games, but I saw a lot of the highlights today after watching the Exeter game. That BT Sport, by the way, do a fantastic job of presenting rugby. They really do. It's a really, really good product on BT. When I watched the Tigers game back today, to really focus on that moment again, to really clarify that after I watched the game. So I said, I want to watch this moment at the end again, get the whole picture of the situation again. Because you don't always take it in fully, the drama of the moment. But literally, along the bottom, like the buffering bar, it's got all the incidents. Try here, penalty, yellow card. And you can click on it. And literally, they just had like, you know, like the emoji for like an explosion, like the red. Mm. It literally was just that sort of thing. It was like fight. And you can click on it and see the whole thing. It was actually really good. And BT, yeah, do a really good job of sport in general. I think it's great that Premiership Rugby's still on that. You know, in a time where sport is becoming more and more behind a paywall, BT's probably not the worst thing to pay for, really.
Well, they're behind a paywall, but you at least get quality for it,
which
you can't. It's not, I suppose it's quite expensive, really, but it's not. They do good coverage, to be fair, for rugby, I think, BT Sport. Just one last thing on a bit of roughhousery in rugby. I think it was the end of last season, but obviously it was like in September, October time, I think it was. And there was a big scrap and you couldn't get the highlights. It was a Gloucester game, I think. And someone pushed a ball boy and they were all piling in. And there was you couldn't find footage of that everywhere. And I think we when it's a talking point, they should have it on TV. I don't know why they try and avoid it. Oh, it's like pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, but it's like anything. It's like if you look at like Twitter pages and that now, like, or Instagram has, they don't really show any of like the big hits or anything. You know, which is, I know the idea of the game is more that we want to see the tries. That's the skill. That's the actual product. It's like a goal in football. Like you don't really see football pages showing all the big tackles that are put in. It's more like, you know, the goals and dribbling and stuff like that. But you know, again, it's a physical game. I watch it because it's a physical game. I like it because it's aggression, you know, and that. So I think, yeah, I think I agree with you. I need a little bit more of that back on the...
And whilst we're at it, when you have pitch invaders, focus on them again as well. When I was a kid, someone ran on the pitch, you always used to get a look at them, and now they cut the camera away and go, oh, isn't this awful? And okay, they disrupt the game, but it's funny.
Well, I like the Americans engage a bit, don't they? But they're always quite funny. Like, a commentator is always, I know, is it Al Michael with the NFL? Is always like, and some jackass has ran onto the field. It's like they really get...
You want to hear him get some abuse. I think it was back in the early days of Super Rugby. I think someone ran on, tried to tackle Justin Harris. He got battered.
Well, do you remember that the South African guy who ran on attacked the referee during a South Africa All Blacks test match?
And
so Richie McCaw again was trying to fill this bloke in.
Yeah,
he broke the referee's arm, I think, actually, and he gets carted off by the South African Secret Service type police blokes. Who, you know, that bloke was never seen again.
I imagine he's buried under Table Mountain at this point.
Mm.
But yeah, we want to see these light-hearted slash. Well, breaking the ref's arm's not very light-hearted, but you know. I know you appreciate. Oh, you don't want to encourage these kind of things, but
I don't know because there was a. Do you remember the one? Was it cricket back in the day with the woman with a lovely set of eyes came onto the pitch, and you know, very lovely eyes. You know, they were bouncing everywhere, and it was enjoyable for everyone. I think. they've great hearts, great dueling hearts.
Good family fun for everyone can enjoy it. All the family, from the well, kids to the grandparents.
Hey, we've all got them. Hashtag free the nipple.
Indeed.
Still behind that.
I don't have nipples in my eyes.
I think we all knew what I was on about. But anyway, Lions watch. A bit of Lions watch. Our man Carl Sinclair, who we both thought should have been in the squad, is now appears to be in the squad, although he didn't play. Or he came off for Bristol with a bit of an injury, I think, which is a shame. But he already pulled out before the game with a bit of an injury. But he seems to be in the squad. Sinclair coming in for Andrew Porter, unfortunately, having to pull out. And then there's a couple of injuries. Went off with ice on his ankle today. And Dan Bigger went off with apparently a bit of a chest problem. So
who was the first one? It cut out, sorry.
Sam Simmons came off with a bag of ice on his ankle. But I think that was more precautionary than anything. I think... Rob Baxter, actually, really interesting point he made after the game. They asked him about that. He said, actually, we didn't do an assessment on him. We just said, bring him straight off, because he's like, we built really good momentum at that point, and we just wanted to get someone on and not have a lengthy stoppage and delay. And they've gone on to win the game. So I think he's really interesting to hear talk. He obviously thinks about things like really, really logically. And it's not always about having your, you know, best player or your first choice player on the park. It's actually more about the team performance and how that is working.
Seems to be a good sort of big picture thinking, isn't he, Rob Baxter? He's almost one step ahead, which I think is probably why Chiefs have been so good for the last, what, 3 years, 4 years. And obviously they've built their way up the levels with him there as well.
Absolutely. But no, other than that, you know, the news really quite level. I think in the South Africa team, I think Vermeulen's a bit of a sweat at the moment. They're not sure about him. And they've picked Steyn. Steyn's back in. I believe it's Franz Steyn and Mornay Steyn are both in the squad to play against the Lions. And
Mornay Steyn's still playing. He's about 75.
He is still playing. He last played for them in 2016. This will be his first Springbok involvement for 5 years.
No doubt.
Against the Lions as well.
Probably win the tour.
It's an initial
drop goals.
Yeah, it's an initial 46-man squad. So I don't think he'll probably play the test series. But...
I'd pick him.
Yeah. And it appears in that 46, I believe, is Jasper Vase.
Ooh.
Has been included.
This is a weird thing, just on that Lions thing, is that South Africa have obviously, the tour have changed that invitational 15 to playing the Lions of Johannesburg. Not the British and Irish Lions, obviously.
The DHL Lions. Gotta get the branding in there.
I don't know, the Emirates Lions. Anyway, the branding's not important because fuck the branding. We're almost a team name named after a company, unless they probably Japan, where they literally are owned by those companies. But most of the South African squad have still come from outside South Africa. So is that any more or less? I suppose they can maybe bubble for longer because they know they're going to be in a test series. I don't know. Whereas the Invitational 15 couldn't be necessarily justified being there for 3 weeks. And I don't know what they're getting paid to turn out for that one day. Maybe probably not worth it or economically viable. But
yeah,
seems a strange one. Well, half the South African team's got to come abroad, come from abroad anyway.
Yeah.
And just on Morné State, and he's kind of a player you don't really get anymore these days. Sort of in that Wilkinson mold of just scored points all the time. The game's not going too well, puts a drop goal over, takes the game out of your opposition's reach, and if you're ahead, or you know, keeps you ticking over and getting you back in the game. I remember there was a game, God, what do you mean, about 10, 11 years ago now, where he Morné beat the All Blacks by himself. I think he scored like 30 points. Just kept dropping goals, kept kicking penalties. I think he scored a try or two as well. Just those unreal individual performances, which doesn't get spoke about a lot. People think of individual performances like Carter against the Lions is one.
Is it Diego Dominguez for Stad against Tigers in the 99? Heineken Cup final, was it Diego Dominguez? The Fly Hoover was playing fly half, kicked 36 points or 35 points, all penalties. They got 35 points in the game. I think they were all penalties. Ridiculous.
Some going. I must have been like, that's pretty much impossible because of maths. There must have been some goals. He must have scored at least a try if he scored 35 points.
No, it's not. I think they might have scored 34 points. It's something like that. It might have been 32. I think
maths, Dan. You've every number you've said is not divisible by three. Come on.
Well, I remember Tigers beat them 35 something. So there was definitely, definitely.
But yeah, I feel like that's a missing, like all time great performance. But I digress. Well, before we move on to our main topic, going back to the part two of the bucket list, I watched a very good documentary / film this morning. As it is Pride Month, I watched the Steelers documentary, because follows the journey of King's Cross Steelers. Mm-hmm. I think it came out this year, but it was filmed a couple of years ago. Their attempt to win the Bingham Cup, which, if you don't know, is like the Gay World Cup. And it's really it's a good, interesting documentary. It's basically the way it's structured is it sort of tells the story of a few of the players and the coach, and basically how they sort of come to terms with being gay and how being involved in rugby kind of has helped them just with their lives, really, kind of like they've found a place. And then it goes along. I won't spoil it and see how they do in the tournament. But it's definitely worth a watch. It's on Amazon Prime. I look for Steelers. And it's good. It's pretty emotional at times, I guess. It's kind of warts and all for these guys. Obviously, I think in a lot of parts of the world, I think being gay is very, very... The fucking hell was that? Did you hear that?
I heard something.
I just heard a bang and a scream. Oh, that was weird. yeah, we're brought up parts of the world, or in a lot of, you know, families and things like that, people being gay is a real, almost impossible thing. So these people go through a lot, and then to then go out on a documentary and sort of go warts and all talking about it is fairly brave. But yeah, it's a good film. I recommend watching it. It's rugby related, and it's just nice to see. It's almost like, remember festivals when you were a kid and they're like, you could play a load of games in one day, and they got like tents and stuff, and like everyone's trying to recover in between games, things like that. But it's all like fully grown adults, and it looks like a good crack to go and play in a tournament like that. And there's not enough of those, I don't think.
I think it's something like we mentioned earlier on about like getting touring things back for like senior rugby, like proper tours, like a 2-week tour or whatever. Maybe like more amateur World Cups or amateur like tournaments like that, you know, would be quite cool. It'd be quite cool to see like clubs from around the world go and you know, maybe like just playing these types of tournaments. So I think it was always something enjoyable we did, like with like summer tours and stuff like that, wasn't it? Like with our club back when we were junior players, we'd go to like do like a Saturday tournament. It was like 20-minute games, wasn't it? Like 10-minute halves or whatever, and got to the knockouts and all that sort of stuff. So that's really, really Interesting. I think, yeah, the whole Bingham Cup thing is obviously a fantastic sort of legacy behind that. And there's quite a few of those documentaries, actually. So I'd recommend people get out there and search for them, because they're well worth a watch. And they're really enjoyable as well, actually, because, yeah, like I say, it's feel good. And for amateur rugby as well, having stuff like that is pretty impressive stuff. And it brings the game together. And like we said earlier in the week, rugby for everybody, motherfucker.
Indeed it is.
And one LGBTQ plus friends.
And as an aside, the sort of, they're kind of framed as the antagonists of the story, because they're like the biggest rivals that the Steelers have for this tournament, but the Sydney Convicts, I have seen play live. When I went to Australia, I went to watch the Waratahs against the Highlanders, and they have like...
I was going to say the Waratahs against the Convicts. I was like, big
doubt. It was like that episode of South Park where the Pee Wee team played the Detroit Red Wings.
Let them play.
It's like stamping on these kids with skates and punching. No, they played the warm-up game beforehand at the now demolished Sydney Football Stadium. And they pummeled the team they were against. It was like Sydney Division 4. It's not a particularly high standard, but yeah, they ripped them a new one. They looked very, very good. Because that year, the Bingham Cup was in Australia. So I think it was like a build a bit of publicity for that. But yeah, there we go.
Nice.
That's a good game, actually. That was the year the Waratahs won the Super Rugby. And back when Izzy Folau was not a bigot, not universally hated by the rugby community, and was just regarded as one of the best players in the world. And he scored a couple that day. He had a really good game, actually.
He's a fucking very good player. But, yeah.
Shame he couldn't keep his thoughts to himself.
So is Satan, I imagine, but I wouldn't want him on my team. Well, that actually, to be fair, you probably would if
you yeah, he'd give you a bit of edge, wouldn't you?
You'd take him.
Satan, he's a seven all day long, you think?
I've got a little quiz question. It's something to think about for the rest of the pod if you don't get it early doors, because I've just fact-checked myself. It was 30 points to Diego Dominguez, so I was correct in the name, just not the amount of points. So 30 kicked, 9 penalties and a drop goal. A classy haul of 30 points. So it's not quite as much as Carter. I think he got 35, didn't he? You said it against the Lions. So not the highest, but he's up there probably in the top five. But question anyway, as it's 10 years since we went to Canada in about a month, just quite a nice little themed question here. There was one Canadian national who was playing for Leicester Tigers in that game. Name that man.
What, Bell back then?
Yeah, 1999, Heineken Cup final. 2001, 19th of May, 2001.
My birthday.
Young Dave Nurse.
My sick birthday.
Tigers win the game 34-30 after Leon Lloyd scores a try right at the end of the game. But who was playing for Leicester Tigers, Canadian international?
Can you give me what position he was? I might narrow it down a bit.
On the left wing.
The left wing? That's one of those names I will know when it comes to me, but I can't think of me at the top of my head.
I'll give you a little bit of time, and after we've done the bucket list stuff, I'll see if you've got anything on your mind, and I'll let you know if you don't. But out there, for the listeners out there as well, you know, play along. So yeah, I guess it's the continuation. I mean, we had a good little natter about rugby there. We don't normally actually talk about rugby like that. We normally bellyache about big stuff, but it's actually nice to talk about things that are going on, the current stuff, bit of shithousery in the Midlands and stuff like that.
We were mostly talking about fighting, to be honest. Very little rugby was involved. Which is a good precursor for probably next week. I think we talk about fighting a bit more.
Fight club. It's like rugby fight club all of a sudden now. So we'll regale our fights and like break them down in depth. Talk about some classic fights, some fights that we'd like to have. No, on with the bucket list. It's the second week of this, so it's like the second of the three parts. It's quite nice, but we had a good in-depth chat about that last week. We got some pretty good feedback on that, really. A few people got in touch this week to say they liked the idea of certain items and they appreciated it, especially playing a season abroad. A lot of people, I think that really resonates with them. They've either done it or they want to do it, and more power to you. Once this smog of... really bad flu clears off, and you can take your tinfoil hats off again. Get yourself out there.
Oh, my tinfoil hat is firmly on now, I'm afraid. I just don't trust Major League Baseball. That's what it is.
You're doing dyeing your hair. Got a little tinfoil dye on there. Bit of boot polish. Got those lovely blonde locks through. Which reminds me, when I watched you on that Rugby Nats thing earlier on, you had the really long, shaggy hair. Very different man. More astute nowadays. You work in IT, so you've got to have the nice haircut, I guess.
I'm well kept. I need to have a shave, actually, but the listeners don't need to hear this. My grooming schedule.
Maybe they do.
If you would like my grooming schedule, send me £5 on PayPal and I will let you know how I get things done.
I have nothing to contribute in that area. Mine's very limited. I still haven't really hit facial puberty yet, I don't think, which is good for me. I've got a real sneaking suspicion that when I can properly grow a beard, that will be it. My hair will completely fall out and I will be bald as fuck. Like my father and his father before him.
I've got a horrendous hairline, but my dad doesn't have a bad hairline, so it comes from my mum's side of the family. But none of them are bald, they just have a terrible hairline. But no, like bald on top. But if you get the top patch goes,
yeah, you've got to
get rid. I think you can pull off like a wise Caesar look with a recede.
But no, if you've got the duck pond, it's got to go, which I think where I'll be at eventually. But I've been using a sort of caffeine shampoo. It's been thickening it up a little bit. But
I stole that when I was at yours last week. Didn't notice any immediate effect, but it's probably not really. It's not a one wash kind of thing, I'm sure.
It's not a one wash. I used to have the horsehair shampoo back in the day. That was good. Like the old mane and tail.
Is it actually for horses, or is that just branded that way?
I believe so. It might. I don't know. Yeah. I had both. I used the conditioner as well, and I had hair. You know, my hair's not fallen out totally yet, so it maybe did something. But
ketamine is for horses. Did you use that back in the day?
Not recreationally, but when I had my bicep reconstruction, I was given the ketamine sedative. So that was really, I had the full shebang. I had the ketamine sedative in the right side, and then in the left side, at the back of my trapezius, I got the local anaesthetic, which made my entire left side numb for like 2 days.
That's a living dream.
I had a bit of nerve damage for a few weeks. You know, you just can't feel anything. Like if I had my eyes closed and someone was tapping me on my left arm, I couldn't actually feel it genuinely.
That sounds terrifying.
But then I got the general anaesthetic as well, which puts you to sleep. Very cold. There's a bit of a cold feeling up your arm, and then before you know it, you wake up and they're pulling a tube out your throat.
That sounds like the bit in the Matrix when he wakes up and gets flushed out that sack.
That's how I felt. I was something got flushed out of a sack.
Jesus Christ. one more thing. Did you get any opioids to seal the deal? You get morphined up as well, or just ket?
No, but here's the fucked up thing, right? When they discharge you, they send you to pick up your drugs for recovery, and they give me a bag. You know, like when you order from McDonald's and they give you a big brown bag. It was like a big brown bag. It was like I'd ordered like 60 chicken nuggets. It was pure. It was codeine and everything like that. I got given like 80 codeine tablets.
Aren't you only meant to take codeine for like 2 days or you get addicted?
Well, this is the thing. I was taking my regime.
You're now physically dependent on codeine.
My regime was, I think it was 3 codeine a day, 6 paracetamols and 2 ibuprofen a day. That is what they had down what I should be taking. And I did that for like 2 weeks. And then I said, right, I'm not in agony anymore. I'm stopping this. And then I hit my elbow on a chair and cried. And I kind of wish I was still pilled
up. And then you did 17 codeine in one go. Had a very good nap.
7 codeines and a glass of red. It's a good afternoon.
Painkillers are amazing. I had really bad wisdom tooth pain in Australia. And I couldn't afford to go to the dentist because it was either that or go on tour. And tour wins every day. So somebody who else had dental something or other done not long ago gave me these pills. They were these big yellow pills. They were probably about that sort of size, which means I'm doing like
five pence.
5p, bigger than like a 5p, but the thickness of a 2 quid. I would be my description. If you don't live in the UK and don't know how big these coins are, I guess like a euro or a dollar.
Or a loony.
We don't have any Canadian listeners, so loony means nothing. But
fuckers.
Yeah. We don't have any American listeners. I don't know why I said dollar either. We're very European only. Probably that one guy from Brazil who listened once.
I don't know. What do they have in Brazil?
a Real, which you got any other countries you want to see if I know the currency of?
Well, I know Dong.
Everyone knows Dong. Everyone's favourite.
You had a Kenyan shilling for a while at one point, didn't you?
Still do. Five of the finest Kenyan shillings in my
I've got five Polish Zorowski.
Zloty.
Yeah.
Whenever I have a scratch card, I use my Kenyan shillings as my good luck charm, and it very rarely wins, as is the odds of a scratch card.
You only get like a free card. That's how they reel you in.
Yeah, I only ever go for the one that's 100 grand prize, the cheapest one for a quid. So you got less odds of winning that one. I've made of money.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's why you're trying to win the money.
I've completely forgot what we're talking about. That was it. Painkillers. Anyway, these painkillers were fucking amazing. I had the worst wisdom tooth pain ever. Took these things and I was just giggling for about 3 hours. It was amazing. Couldn't feel a thing. Everything slowed down. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, after the first time, it never quite hit the same. So I had to have more and more. And then I was out on the street sucking dick for heroin.
Injected between your toes.
So it had a sad end to that story.
I'm just imagining you like in a really short, like neon pink skirt now on the streets of Sydney.
Which is scratching my arms. I won't do this impression of what I would say. It's offensive to everybody involved. Anyway, so what were we talking about?
We're lined up for the bucket list, man. It's been a classy episode, to say the least. This has
got it all so far.
Amateur hour, but very good. It's been a very fluid. But no, second week of the bucket list. So number six, slotting himself in at a blindside flanker, would be to attend the Rugby World Cup. So this is quite an obvious one, quite a big one to do really as well. But I think it's so worth doing, especially when it's at this stage as well in rugby's history. It's going to be in different countries quite a lot. I know obviously the next one's in France, and at the moment I think it's between Russia and Australia.
Russia and Australia, yeah, for the one after. Which
so, I think it's good. As it branches out in the next sort of 20 years or so, it's going to be really cool because obviously it's got to be in America at some point soon.
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
Or the Sevens World Cup there, didn't they?
Yeah,
that went really well.
It could be North America at the very least if they throw one at Canada or Mexico or something. How could that be actually? The Azteca, huge stadium, hosted two football World Cup finals. I mean, probably shouldn't host the final, but that'd be a good place to go and have a game. Yeah, I think this is an important sort of add-on to this as well. To go attend a World Cup, but in another country.
Yeah, in your home country are well and good. Of course, don't go.
But to tick it off,
yeah.
You've got to go abroad, maybe a couple of weeks, 3 or 4 games. I appreciate it's pricey, but, you know, you only live once, and there's no prizes for having extra money when you're dead. So,
no.
Spend those dollars where they count.
Yeah.
But you say it's going to be in a lot more interesting places, which I think it certainly will. I could easily see, like, say the next one goes, or after France, that one goes to Australia. I can see that being the last sort of traditional home crowd really for a while. I think then we'll see it go all over the place, which I prefer. I mean, South America is another obvious one.
Yeah, there's a lot of countries with really great infrastructure to host, isn't there?
Yeah, but like Brazil, Argentina could do a host, or Brazil, Chile, Argentina, all three, Uruguay, just have a South American tournament. I think that would be really, really good. And again, I imagine it's probably not a million miles away till we have somewhere like China become a rugby playing nation as well, which people haven't got a lot of nice things to say about China's government, which I understand, but in terms of spreading the game, I think a World Cup in China would be interesting. I'd go to China. But Italy is another very good example. An Italian World Cup would be fantastic.
Great stadiums.
Yeah. I'd say Russia would be a good one. I'd say Russia's coming on leaps and bounds at the minute in rugby. They've got professional league there. Obviously, Sevens is now the Olympic calendar, which is a big deal in Russia. So, you know, they'll be getting behind that a bit more. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, 10 years from now, with the likes of Georgia giving, you know, some tier one nations a real good run for their money, we don't see Russia do the same thing. And we don't see Russia sort of knocking on the door of, you know, are they strong enough to then be in the Six Nations, I think. And them hosting the World Cup would be such a big thing for that as well. Obviously, getting the best and the brightest coming to Russia, really going to spread the game around there.
And I know you mentioned China. The issue we've got as well, obviously, is Russia's got a pretty bad, and it's pride. It's interesting with it being Pride Month as well, and sort of raising the profile of that. It's difficult, isn't it, going to these countries and showing that, like, yes, we're for pride and stuff like that, but then to go to somewhere like Russia where it's basically, I don't know whether it is illegal or not there at the moment, but it's very not good. There's a lot of persecution of homosexuals across the board there. It's very difficult, isn't it, to do that. But I think it's one of those where, like, to affect change, you've got to be there. Do you know what I mean? You've got to still go and do these things. Yeah, it's such a difficult double-edged sword. I think it's great for the game, but it's also bad for the game in a sense that the place that you go in, you know, it's...
With the getting into geopolitics now, which is not what we're for, but you know what? Fuck them. We'll take on the big questions. Are you listening, Vladimir? I think Russia, generally speaking, I think gets reported in this part of the world worse than I think it actually is, because it's the enemy, in quotes. I think Poland have recently, or parts of Poland have passed some pretty dodgy laws in terms of LGBT stuff, and they get nowhere near the coverage. And I don't think it's necessarily a good thing, but I believe it's not as bad as it's made out in Russia. Like, this, it's not. I think it was you couldn't advertise anything that was LGBT, and there are some weird law restrictions over there, I think. But I think in terms of, like, out and out, you know, like, street persecution, I think it's not as bad as you think. Not that anything's good, I think, but ultimately it's not rugby's place either to be saying how people should be treated. Well, say this is, we don't agree with this or that, so you can't have the World Cup, I think. It's a weird moral dilemma, but let's be honest, like, none of the other countries that have hosted the World Cup have got a clean slate, if you want to pick on them. You know, obviously you've got Britain and France have got a colonial history. New Zealand and Australia have had pretty dodgy dealings with indigenous populations, etc., etc.
Yeah, again, I think it's this whole thing, isn't it, with modern times. Everyone seems to, like, think they're pretty good, but really we're not always from the best stock. You don't have to go far back to see, you know, being homosexual is basically illegal in the UK.
Exactly. And that, to point the finger at these places, I think it's a bit hypocritical. It didn't hold back any of the countries that have hosted the Football World Cup, for example. And if you want to get, you know, no country in the world has got a clean slate. Even the most recent World Cup, obviously Japan, horrendous human rights abuses during the 20th century, or the early first half of it anyway. So, you know, I think rugby does more good, and spreading the game of rugby around the world will do more good than saying these countries can't have it, because by our hypocritical standards, they don't quite meet them. But anyway, why
geopolitics coverage?
Yeah, you've got this. We've had it all this week. This is you're getting extra. We should start charging. But to the point, I think the World Cup, I mean, I've not done it. I've watched home when it was in England in 2015. I went to a couple of games. I just think it's one of those trips of a lifetime, isn't it? Like I say, it will cost you a couple of $3,000, but you're probably only going to do it once. Unless you're fucking minted, in which case money's no object and you've probably already gone. But
fuck you.
But you know, if you're like us and you're not minted, it's worth saving for, isn't it? You say, just few quid a month away for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years and go, that's the one I'm going to.
Yeah, you've got a lot of time to save up for it if it's in cycle, especially if the next one's going to be in Russia. You've got probably, what, nine years? No, 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years, yeah.
Yeah, you've got 6 years to save for it, so there you go. But, all right, well, speaking about minted, slotting itself in at the open side is Mr. Minty Man himself, Jackie Lorenzetti's birth child, the La Défense Arena, home of Racing 92. To see a game there, that's got to be on the rugby bucket list. Now, I know last week we put on there about going to see a game at the Stade Marcel Michelin, but that was for atmosphere in the sense of the fan culture and the sort of gravity of the situation. Whereas I think the La Défense Arena is more of a suave, niche, kind of cushy place to go watch a game. It's indoors. There's a huge, like, 100-foot massive screen. I've been told it's like being at a rock concert because the sound quality is amazing. They have like bands come out at half time and play music because it's an artificial pitch. It's a really incredible venue. And I loved hearing Lorenzetti's take on it. You know, he said it's better than being sat there in the freezing cold. You can bring your kids, you can bring your grandma, grandpa. They can all come here because it's warm, it's indoors, it's nice. The game won't be affected. And, you know, you see the two teams playing at their best, not affected by a muddy field or whether it's rained for 3 days before the game, whether the wind's strong. It's perfect conditions for a game always. It's an interesting thing.
The very Parisian approach. Yes. Like you say, we don't want to get wet and windy. We want to be comfortable when we watch the rugby and have a nice glass of red wine, Vin Rouge. Yeah, it is a music venue, isn't it, as well, alongside being a...
Yeah, it's a multi-purpose arena, for sure. I think it's just an easy one because it's so
architecturally unique in that way. Very interesting. I mean, I think having a building, obviously, that big, that's indoors, designed for sport, is quite unusual. And there's a lot of retractable roofs and things like that. I mean, it's not a massive stadium, but it's an interesting thing, I think. You'd like to go, I think, as I say, it's very Parisian. How are you going to attract a big Paris crowd for when you've got, well, two major clubs there that have got to sort of split that local fan base? Well,
it's quite a footballing city as well, isn't it? You know, PSG is the big thing there.
Well, not just that, but I think the football, something like stupid, like 18 of the players in the Champions League semi-finals were born in Paris or something this year. Like, it's ridiculous. Wow. The talent that's come out of Paris in football. I've never actually been to Paris, unless you count Charles de Gaulle Airport. But, you know.
Yeah, we had a stop off there, didn't we, for a couple of hours. Very nice airport.
Up there with all the, I would say, the best French airport. Go out on a limb. But yeah, it's a kind of a, you think of Paris, it's kind of like a, well, your traditional view of Paris is kind of like a high class city, high culture. I think in real life, it's like any major city, some nice bits, some not nice bits, but it's quite a bit of deprived areas in Paris, etc. But it's, like I say, architecturally impressive and a very unique match day experience, I'm sure. I would like to go there with my grandma as well. Hopefully Tigers can draw Racing sometime soon.
Yeah.
We'll go along.
Fair play. Right, next one, slotting at number 8, a key position, but we're going for a bit of a kooky, bit of a party selection here, a bit of a fun time guy. He's not just hard at hitting the rooks and picking off of the back of a scrum. He's also a good laugh in the changing room. His dad might get some jugs in at the bar for the boys. It's catching a game from the zoo end at the Highlanders. So at the Forsyth Bar Stadium, getting yourself behind the goal on, I think, it's either the south stand or the north stand. I don't know which one it is off the top of my head. But anyway, it's the behind the goal. It's the student section, if you will, where the Landers fans sit in the area called the zoo. It's bigged up a really good atmosphere. It's pretty much always stacked full of people. And a lot of the time they're wearing KFC buckets on their head, which is bloody brilliant. Big fan of that. Enjoyable all around.
It always does a good laugh. Dunedin is a university city. They always make a good atmosphere everywhere. I remember watching England play cricket there at the University Oval in Dunedin not long ago. And this similar thing, the students come out in force and make it a party time. It's the same anytime you watch the Highlanders, and normally it's the stand that's full behind one of the ends normally. And it is a party atmosphere. Like I say, cheap tickets, people boozing, buckets on their heads. I think a very different viewing experience to what we've just spoken about in Paris.
Yeah.
But I imagine I'd say probably a lot more fun. If not, you'd miss a lot of the game due to being pissed. It's one of the cities I always would like to go to, based off of nothing that I like Otago's colours of blue and yellow. So
yeah, it's a really nice game. And that is a cool stadium all around. It's a fully enclosed stadium with a non-retractable roof. It's just enclosed, isn't it?
It's glass as well.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. To me, it sounds like a magnifying hell, like burning ants from in the summertime.
They can't sign any ginger players, and any away team coming with a ginger player has to drop them the week of that game. Sorry, son, you can't play. Only thankfully, if it's an evening kickoff.
Dunedin is a cloudy, cold city, so the risk of being burnt to death by the sun magnifying on the glass roof is minimal. And it's a very Kiwi kind of move, that I think quite a relaxed bunch, quite up for a good time. Famously like a beer, famously like rugby, obviously. And the two come together well there in the zoo section, which does like a good laugh. I'm sure you'd make some friends if you went there, if you just turned up with, I don't know, a six pack of beers, chucked them around. Maybe put a KFC bucket on your head, which I don't know if the Colonel's paid him out for the advertising there, but he should do. Wherever you are, Harland Sanders, get your wallet out.
Isn't he dead?
I think he is, yeah. My dad's seen him in real life.
Yeah, I like that story. It's a good story.
I think I've told this on the podcast before, but not the first time I've had to go the late Colonel Sanders.
Bloody, I'd eat some chicken right now. Bloody love KFC. Slotting in, we made a decision at scrum half. Very key position again. You know, we've had two key positions. I mean, all positions on the pitch are important. Loose head is as important as fly half in its own way. But really sort of key position in terms of ticking over the whole team is scrum half. And, you know, scrum half's going to be gobby. It's going to have a lot of energy. And for this reason, we've put in here coaching a kids team. So either your own kids team, if you have children, well done you. Or just, you know, maybe your nephew's playing or whatever, or just helping out the local community, your club. I think getting out there coaching a kids team is something really enjoyable and rewarding. And the reason why it's a bucket list item, I think, is just because, you know, we always talk about the sort of values of rugby and contributing to the future of rugby and stuff like that. And what better way to do that than by coaching the future players of tomorrow? You never know. You might be coaching someone there who goes on to become an England legend, perhaps a lion even. Who knows? But yeah, so there you go. That's the next one on the list there.
I think, like I say, it's a very valuable thing. We've both coached kids' teams over the years. I did Australia. I haven't really done it much over here, to be honest, but a bit less time over here, which is a poor excuse, I know. Here's a controversial opinion, though. I think if you want to coach and you've got your own kids, I know there's obviously appeal of wanting to coach your own kids, but there's so many dads who are terrible coaches who go into coaching for all the wrong reasons. They want to coach their kids, not because they want to, you know, teach them the game of rugby and give them all the experiences they've had out of it, because they just want to desperately try and force their children to become professional rugby players from the age of six onwards and treat their children terribly. I've seen it on the sideline of blokes shouting at their kids, like really giving them a dressing down because at the age of nine, they missed a couple of tackles, or, they, you know, And they tend, you've seen some coaches try and coach the teams to be extremely selfish, normally to give it to their son to then give him the ball all the time.
So many things. So many.
There's some piss poor people. And I appreciate clubs can't really turn these people away. But I think if you're a dad and you want to coach, you should, A, think, am I actually well suited for coaching a rugby team? If the answer is no, then probably you shouldn't. And I think maybe clubs say, if you want to coach, that's grand, but you coach somebody else, don't coach your lad, because I think you get favouritism and you'll be amazed if you've never been involved in a minis rugby team. The amount of bullshit off-field politics that goes on between parents, cliques, is unbelievable. It's the most ridiculous piece of stress I've ever had in my life, is trying to mediate a bunch of cunts.
Oh, God.
Shouting and swearing at a kid's game of rugby and falling out with each other because I don't know if they don't get on or their kids don't get on or one leads to the other. But my God, it's a nightmare.
Well, it's, you know, it's all about the sort of group. I think we're quite lucky here with the club that I work with. There's actually a lot of, you know, really keen parents in a good way. And I think that's really good. I think the thing about that as well is a lot of clubs that you are reliant on, like you say, on people who volunteer to do it. And, you know, your back is kind of against the wall in some ways because of that. But the really positive thing, I think, that, you know, if you're a first team player out there or something like that, is, you know, offer up your services just to go down one Sunday or one Wednesday night or whatever. And just, even if you have no ambition about being a coach, or you don't actually have the whole coaching package to be able to, you know, give them a lot of stuff, but let's just say you're a flanker who's really good at getting over the ball, just go down and teach them that. Just go down, teach them the one thing that you're really good at. Or if you're really good at stepping, if you're a winger who's got great feet, go down and do a couple of just stepping drills that you did as a kid to get really good at sidestepping or something like that. Or yeah, if there's one thing that you're really good at, just go and impart that wisdom to all the teams. Just go down once a week for like 4 or 5 weeks to all the different age groups and just impart that wisdom, that one thing that you do really well, because that can then become something that runs through the club until they hit seniors. And then it becomes a real theme through the club. Maybe your club then gets a really strong identity for offloading because you've taught them how to do the little out the back hand when they're like 10 and they keep doing it and doing it and doing it, you know. And even the coaches who are there, who maybe are just volunteer dads who played a bit of second team or third team themselves socially, so they don't really know loads and loads, maybe they pick up something from you as a player who's, you know, playing at the elite level of your club. Do you know what I mean? So
I think
that's what I'd say on that one.
I think it's such an important thing that with like the first team is stepping down, or not necessarily first team, but senior players who haven't got a vested interest in any of the individual kids in the team. They're not doing it because it's their son or a nephew or a brother or whatever, but they're going down because they're doing it for the club, and it helps build that community at the club. Something that I felt was really strong in Australia, more so than I've ever really felt it over here. I think that probably tied into, like I said last week when I was about playing abroad, and we were talking about how we'll fix it amateur rugby, wasn't it? All the clubs playing on the same day at the same place, but the kids are involved in that as well. And when I was in Australia, there was a senior player was involved in coaching most of the age group sides. And it's just in terms of saying, like, you know, this is our club, this is our community, this is what we do on a Saturday. And you're building that kind of aspiration for the young'uns when they're, you know, 9, 10, 12, they probably think, oh, these first teams are stars. When you got, you know, these, you know, giant Islander props who are teaching, you know, being really, you know, fun and gentle with the kids and teaching them through playing it. But then they go and watch them, you know, just be monsters on the pitch. You've got the foreign lads as me, a couple of other guys from England and Wales who are coming on doing coaching. And it's like, oh, this is amazing for these little kids. And even then, when you go up to the 14, 15, 16, it's a bit more serious. And you've got guys who are playing the first team now, you know, they're guys who are going to be stepping up in a few years' time to be in that level. And it keeps people around, you know, oh, this is my club, I want to stay here, instead of it being like you played there at juniors, you go off to school, you go off to uni and you come back, you don't know anyone in the seniors team, which is kind of what happens here. It's probably where we get quite a bit of player drop off. I just think for your own, like, your own well-being, you coach a team, coach a kids team, you feel good about yourself. I think I used to every we Tuesdays and Thursdays, like the seniors, it'd be like 6 o'clock before we started training. You feel good about yourself. You've had a bit of run around with the kids. They seem to have fun. And you on a Saturday, you go and play and, you know, win, lose, or draw. You know, you big up the kids and say, you know, you've had try and make sure they have a fun Saturday. Sometimes they play well because there's, you know, they're excited. Sometimes they play crap because they're nine and they can't be asked. but, you know, you get on with it and you have a good time. I can't stand seeing people have a go at kids for not playing very well. I appreciate you can get frustrated that kids aren't trying very hard or being downright rude in some cases, but when people get on top of kids' back, nothing winds me up more in the world. I think you are a terrible human being.
I don't know, Dave. I'm all for an autocratic leadership style with kids rugby. Press ups for every drop ball, even if their hands aren't big enough to hold it. Size five at under fives. They can't catch it. Press ups. Press ups, tire flips and sprints.
Indeed. There's a point.
They'll be fit and emotionally broken.
And then you could turn them into killing machines and or good rugby players. Your choice. You've got the power. But last week when I came down to you and we watched the juniors play on the Sunday, wasn't it? Mm. I won't name names of the club from where this guy was coaching, but he was a cock. The way he was treated like it was some sort of professional game for what was also the last game of the season, and like a mixed like barbarians team, because it was enough to make sure everyone in the area, the clubs in the area, could get one more game out. And it was like, oh, I want one couple more minutes to run through running lines in a warm-up. Like, why are you being a knob? Just the kids are there to play. You're sapping the fun out of it with your clipboard and your
cock. Oh, yeah, yeah. we were rinsing it a little bit from the sideline, but watching. Yeah. But no, that was actually really interesting, wasn't it? I know we mentioned it last week, but there was one moment in that game where because a few of the lads who played in that game came down and helped us get this little gym project started, you know, doing a bit of digging and whatnot, getting some volunteering hours in there for their DV and that as well. And I was sort of telling them, there's one moment where, you know, this opposition, they knocked it on over the line. It was scooped up by the sort of Honiton Withercombe mixed bunch, as it was, the bar-bars of the East Devon area. And they just ran it out from behind their own try line and like stepped a few people, you know, there were a few offloads, a couple out the backers, a nice delayed pass, and they went and scored. It was like coast to coast. And it was great rugby. I think it's really enjoyable when you see kids doing that, because it's before the games become immensely serious, but it's so serious to them because it is, they want to win and that. And it's great. So I couldn't recommend them more, getting out there coaching some kids for sure. Last one on the list for this week, slotting in at the fly half position, the quarterback, the sort of the Johnny Wilkinson, the Ronan O'Gara, the Dan Carter, the names go on and on, the Freddie Burns. I'm putting Freddie Burns in there with the collection of three of the best fly halves ever. Go on, Freddie. Get on, you lad. I've put in it, and this is kind of one, I guess, that ties on a little bit to what we were just saying there. So, you know, might not be too much to say for this, really, but just either playing for your hometown or a place that you've made your home, you know, you fell in love with and you want to live there forever, playing for one of those, for the first 15 of that club. So whether it's your hometown that you've grown up playing through the age groups and all that, or it's a place where you've gone and made home and you've sort of fell in love with the place, playing for the first 15 of that club is a bucket list item, I think. And it's not one that's necessarily always in your power, but if you want stuff, you know, you can work for it and maybe work hard to get there. If you're a second team player there now, you could maybe put this on your bucket list to say, I want to be a first team guy. And this could be, you know, something to tick off on the list of rugby life. Just because I think there's an immense pride in representing your town at the sort of highest level of that competition, you know what I mean, that you can do for the town, as well as, you know, also just being able to push yourself to be the best that you can be for that moment in your playing career, really. Immense pride with that one, I think, you know. Nice pride to pull on the shirt, the club badge, you know, and all that.
I think it's a nice quaint one. I've been lucky enough to pull on the hometown shirt. I kind of do both, I guess, because I'll bang on about a fair bit. But so in Australia, that was, like I said, that community of that club was a really strong thing. And we were a terrible club as well. We were crap. We finished bottom every league. All the way from first grade down to Colts. We were poo. But it was, I felt like part of the club. And I say coaching the kids, being playing like three games in a Saturday because someone had to, you know, and playing all this. And then to finally kind of get rewarded with a string of first team games at the end of the season was, you know, a really special feeling. I did feel proud to represent Bullaroo. You know, what a collection of small towns, mostly full of bogans. But nonetheless, they were my bogans. You know, it was a really nice really nice way to kind of finish off my time there. And yeah, and it was like seeing the kids who I'd coached be on the sideline and be like saying hello after the game and say, oh, tell me you played really well, even though I didn't, things like that. And it, yeah, that's when it's somewhere I guess you found as well. That is very special. But then, you know, lucky enough, in recent years, I've played for Roby Wigs, which is where I played as a wee boy at 5 years old, first turned out. To also go away for a while and come back, and then, you know, come back and play for the first team again. And there is a certain pride. I think it's weird stepping into the changing room or stepping into the clubhouse after playing for the first team and kind of thinking back to when I was six and coming into the clubhouse after training or after a game and getting sweets. Because it used to be a very good tuck shop down Obi Wigs on a Sunday morning. Probably what I remember most of all, really, was the tuck shop. But it's a very surreal feeling, I think, walking back into that clubhouse after so many years, as with, you know, the tie on, buying a pint and chatting shit with your mates, some of whom also came through the, you know, the minis down there. And it's there was a certain pride in it, I guess. It's, you feel like you're amongst the best of the local boys. You've done good. It's a nice feeling, and it's very, very quaint. It's a nice one to finish on that, Daniel.
Yeah, that is. I was going to say that's a lovely point to round things off with there. Very nice indeed. Now I think you bang on it. Is just having that pride in representing the hometown where you're from. There's a lot to be said of that. Even if where you're from is a bit of a shithole, it's where you're from. It's where you happen to be birthed into the world. So you've got to embrace it.
Not implying that Obi and Wigston is a shithole.
No,
or Bullaroo. Oh, I will defend Bullaroo to the hilt.
Go on, Bullaroo.
And also, it's an important part, I guess, of rugby in a fair few sort of towns. You think of sort of your countries. You think of like Wales, where every or the southwest is quite similar, I guess, where every village has got a team.
Yeah,
and some of those teams punch well above their weight. But you obviously think of like the valley teams, the likes of, you know, Pontypridd and Pontypool, all across Keys. These are not huge places, but they are really big, or fairly famous rugby clubs in Wales. And then, you know, south of France as well, it's a similar, like French rugby is very sort of civic pride based.
Yeah, I've heard stories of like groups of people who are stuck in like the second or third team of a club, and they've gone. In one town, they've gone, you know what, fuck this. We live in the village over here anyway. We travel here. We're not getting a game in the ones. Fuck this. We're going to make a club in our own town. And they'll go and they'll build a clubhouse. They'll build a change room. They'll put a set of posts up and roll out a pitch and that. And that's that. I've heard of that story happening a few times. People have made clubs just because they weren't, and they wanted to play first team. And even though they end up, you know, they have to start right at the bottom. They're playing like, you know, Division 6, like level 12 rugby or whatever. They're first teamers, and there is a real pride in being the first team player, I think. And it's, you know, it's something that we had at school, like we've said before, the incentive of getting your tie for playing, I think, 12 or 14 games, wasn't it? Something like that. And then, you know, little things like that as well. Whereas, you know, you see a lot of blokes at clubs who get like their 100 caps or 150 games, or they get a life membership or something like that. There's a lot of special things in that. And the old, you know, I always thought at one point that I'd be a one club guy, perhaps, but not to be. Mm. But there's something to be said about that. Those people who play like 300 odd games for their one club, it's pretty cool, and they've been there since five all the way through.
quite rare these days. Just think of how modern life is, not even getting into such a semi-professionalism, just that, you know, the amount of people stop playing when they get to sort of early adulthood, people who, you know, go off to uni, move towns and leave it behind. I always find it kind of strange when people move away, and I think if you don't know anyone in that area, like, easiest way to make some friends is just nip down the rugby club, I guess, and say, new to the area.
Yeah.
Let me turn out for threes and punch one in the back of the head.
All the hamstring.
Yeah, indeed. Remember my first game, actually, when I went back to OB Wigs after a time off. It was an away day in Pinley in Coventry, which, if you don't know, quite a rough club.
We've said before, most Coventry clubs are terribly rough.
I mean, these take Coventry club to a new level. It's unbelievable.
They are the Coventry club of Coventry clubs.
I'm pretty sure the other Coventry clubs don't like going there because they go, oh, fucking hell, they're a Coventry club. Like I said, I quite admire that Coventry rugby has kind of got a tradition of being a bit sort of physical, a bit shirty, a bit punchy. And like we said at the start of the show, that's good. Part of rugby. And people don't, I used to enjoy playing those games where, you know, there's a bit of an edge to it. And, like, you know, during the 80 minutes you're playing again, you know, these guys are twats. But you finish the game, you know, well, they probably are still twats, but you at least have a, you know, have a beer with them after the game. But it's fun. I can't say I did not enjoy playing, but that was good. I got yellow carded as well because somebody brought down a maul that wasn't me. But I got the Raptor as well. So it was a brilliant triumphant return. But, you know, starting the second team, work my way up to getting back in the first team again. And it's and like you say, that local pride of playing for the first team is a nice feeling. And we feel like you've earned it as well. I say you've started all the way from the bottom and come through, and you've played for every team at the club, and that's something that's yeah, I think if you're moving around and you're following money or following a bit of success, you kind of maybe miss it a little bit. You know, maybe certain, when you've had to really graft to win that shirt, I think it means just a little bit more. And probably means a bit more than that if it's, you know, it's where you started from youngin'.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to, you know, being excited again with the season impending, coming, you know, to us in the next few months, and more stories being made, more people making first team debuts, earning that shirt, maybe keeping hold of it for a whole season, playing every game or you know, other similar things like that. It's exciting, man. Rugby's on its way back. It's alive and kicking, and it's good fun. And we're here, you know, good to hear these things hopefully coming back more and more. So very nice, wholesome thing to finish on. I enjoyed that. Good talk this week. Very good.
What we're about. We've had it all. Yeah. Fighting, drug abuse, trading sexual favors for drugs,
geopolitics,
and then just good wholesome fun.
Content. Yeah, some wholesome content to finish off with. It's not all doom and gloom and sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There's also coaching kids and giving back to the community.
Exactly. We get a good mix here. If you enjoyed the good mix, why not donate to us? We have a PayPal. Still, I know we don't have the crowdfunding anymore, but you go on our website. There's still a link for PayPal. You can give us a couple of quid here and there. Just keep us going and say, you know what? I enjoyed that wholesome content or that ridiculous anecdote about
feed Nursie's drug addiction.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not off it yet. I may have my own, you know, actual job to pay for my opioids now, but they didn't pay for themselves. Please, I need it.
Oh dear. Right, well, I think that's as good a place as any to finish on. I've been Dan, he's David. We have our 99s with a flake. I hope you do too.
Peace.